Hello and welcome to another episode of the Construction Corner podcast. I'm Dylan, I'm your host. And guys, the Construction Corner is here for everything commercial construction. We cover marketing, training, leadership, development, how to be your best self. We cover the 75 Hard program and why you should be doing it no matter what position you are within the construction industry. We talk about ultra running and all that kind of good stuff because I do these crazy events, right? On a recent podcast, we talked about me doing my last 100-mile attempt and getting 88 miles within 27 and a half hours. This show is about becoming the best possible version of yourself, hosted by myself, Dylan Mitchell, and Matt Vetter. Matt is a general contractor out of the state of Michigan, building all sorts of cool commercial buildings. I'm Dylan Mitchell, electrical engineer, and have done over $750 million worth of construction in healthcare, industrial, offices, K-12, higher ed, dining halls, dormitories, multifamily, truck shops, you name it. I've pretty much been a part of it. Retail, restaurants, all sorts of buildings throughout the commercial space. So when we really come on here and talk about what we've done, what we're doing, how we're building things, you know, we're doing it from a place of experience in projects and solved problems and having great conversations with owners, maintaining great owner relationships, and just doing a great job for these clients. So as we come on here, as we talk about these things, like, we do have a ton of experience in going after these projects. So today, what I want to talk to you about is, you know, we've gone about talking about like my recent 100-mile attempt and what that really means. And so some of this is from a point of, look, you got to put yourself in difficult and challenging situations. Now, in the construction world, we do this kind of somewhat inadvertently all the time, in that we're in challenging situations that we really don't want to be in. We put ourselves in difficult places, or we find ourselves in difficult places. Not that we put ourselves there, but we just found ourselves in a difficult situation, difficult conversation. You know, whether it's a change on a project, a change order, unforeseen condition, something, right, always occurs on these projects. And so there's always going to be some type of difficult conversation or just a question to ask in, hey, what do we want to do here? Right. Like, something is as simple. I'm working on a retail, like, core and shell of a building. And one of the, like, simple questions here is like, hey, we have all this signage that's going to go on the building eventually for each retail tenant within the space. So, like, for, you know, whatever retail tenant, they're going to have signage. Hey, do we want to do these punch outs, right, and rough ins for those signs now, right, in the core and shell package, or do we want to wait for TI? This is by no means a big thing at all, right? It's a tiny thing, but it is an important piece and just a coordination item, right? Like, hey, do we want to do this now or later? And with this project in particular, we're working with the general contractor. So then it becomes a, you know, pretty easy question for them, like, hey, how do you want to scope this? Do you want to do it now and deal with those, you know, rough-ins now, or do you want to deal with it later? Totally up to you. We really don't care. It's just, hey, do we need to include this now or not? In those types of situations, those little things are, I mean, the list is long of what they could be, what things you want to bring up. And again, this is a small dollar item, right? Maybe a few thousand bucks in total for this project in particular. And so, but yet we have these same conversations around things that are, you know, $1 million or 10 million or whatever it might be for the given project that you're working on. Like, take, for example, a hospital, right? How many outlets and rough-ins do we want here? Or what's the head wall going to look like in all these patient rooms, and you're doing a patient tower? And so that one additional device or 10 or, you know, different configurations of how that works in a, let's say you have 100 bed tower, like, well, now that really starts to add up as to that one decision. So when we go through a lot of these decision processes, like, we have to really think through those pieces. And when I talk about a 100-mile race, and, you know, being on my feet for 27 and a half hours, things really start to compound over time. And the same goes in a project, right? A small project, you're going to have, you know, all these decision choices, right? Of gear, air handler locations, you know, what's the facade going to look like? What's the parapet going to look like? Can we see the units, right? And you're going to have those same decisions on a $1 billion hospital project. And so the decisions are always there in a small project and in a large project. It's just, you know, you're going to have a lot more decisions for every single space type within a hospital versus, you know, a 5-unit retail center, right? 10,000 square feet versus, you know, 1 million square foot hospital, right? Just a lot more decisions need to be made on that hospital than on that retail. But it doesn't mean that the decisions that you, or the questions that you ask are much different, right? They are, because the project types are different. You're going to have emergency systems in a hospital. You're going to have all these backups and redundancies. You're going to have different user groups for different areas of the hospital, right? You're going to have donors that want their specific things. So tons of different criteria and decision-making processes, but the process is the same. You're just going to have more to run through in a hospital than you will for a retail center. So as you go through each of these, like, just know it's similar to ultra running, right? In a small race, you don't have as many issues or things that are going to come up. In a ultra marathon, those things are going to compound on you, right? Like, what food you choose to eat is going to significantly affect you 18 hours later. In a marathon where you're out there 5 hours, you know, it's not going to have that same effect. Half marathon for 2.5 hours. Again, you're going to have, like, what you eat is not going to be as detrimental or as helpful as, you know, what you eat in a ultra marathon. Just the time compounding works, can work in your favor or it can work against you. And you just don't have that in shorter races. Kind of like in smaller projects, you have these decision criterias, but you can recover from them a little easier versus on big projects. You know, some of the most crucial decisions, you're almost not going to recover from them, or it'd be very difficult to recover in some cases for a poor decision. So what does this have to do with, like, commercial construction and kind of relating these two fields? Well, in anything that we go through, we just have to make sure that we're communicating effectively with the owner, the other trades, asking good questions, giving good explanations. And one of the recent posts that I did on LinkedIn, kind of a little article, is talking about the history of how things work, right? So no story about 100 milers is going to be well without talking about the Western States ultra marathon. So Western States is, like, the oldest 100 miler, I believe, in the world. And it started as a horse race here in California, actually, out of Squaw Valley, which is where the Olympics were held in 1960. So the Olympics were there in Squaw Valley, California, which is just outside of Lake Tahoe. So, like, all the Olympic Village stuff is there. Got all the downhill. I mean, it's like a world-class ski resort, obviously, for hosting the Olympics. So you have, basically from Squaw Valley over the Sierras is down into a town called Auburn, is where the Western States 100 miler kind of traverses through. And in that, you had it, again, originate as a horse race. And then 1 year, some dude showed up and decided that he was going to run it on foot against the horses. And then, kind of, you know, a few years, more and more people decided they would do it. And then, you know, eventually became a self-propelled man only, you know, band woman only, not a horse, right? So you have to go on your own feet. Race rather than a horse race. So, like, that's the origination of the Western States 100. Then you have other races like Leadville and things like that that have come since, which are, again, some of the most iconic 100-mile races in the world. And you have these races that originated, again, in the mountains, very tough, very difficult, big endurance races. And that's why they're so iconic. And the same with, like, Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, UTMB, in Europe, where you go around, you circumnavigate Mont Blanc. So It's 135 miles, I believe, around the base of that. You go through, I think it's four countries in doing it. And it's become a very international event, very big event, very iconic event. And again, a lot of history around those things too. And I made a post relating to history in that we need to educate those that kind of come after us in the history of the industry, right? Like, why do we have on the electrical side, like, why do we have these tamper resistant receptacles? Well, in homes and in schools and like kindergartens and stuff, you had kids that would shove shit in an outlet and they would hurt themselves, right? They'd get shocked or cause a fire because things got stuck in the outlet. So you have these tamper resistant outlets now for that very reason. And so you kind of look at what the history of the thing is, why it came to be, why we're doing this now. And it gives not only a little bit of like, there's a safety lesson in there. There's a how this came to be. There's a why do we do this now reason, instead of just like, well, this is the way it is, right? This is why we do things. Instead of doing that, you kind of explain, hey, man, this happened. And then, you know, this is basically what ended up getting put in place to help resolve that for the future. So the same thing for like arc flash and electrical safety. And I believe it was actually the early 2000s, a worker at Ford was working on a bus plug. So over an assembly line and working on a bus plug, opened it up and doing something with it, basically fell off a ladder. Arc flash had happened in that, right? So something arced across the phases of the electrical equipment in the bus plug. And then he fell off a ladder and there was subsequent court cases. I don't know if it was a workman's comp issue or those details, I forget, but basically it ended up in court through this thing called arc flash. And then after that, you kind of had in the late 2000s, this whole kind of surgence of electrical safety and arc flash and figuring out these values. So then you had the IEEE come up out with all the calculation values to determine the incident energy at a given point within the electrical system to then determine what type of FR clothing you should wear. And then they've added a few things after that, right? Like having eye protection because of the flash that happens with an electrical arc. So you have this very bright light. So you have some type of shielded eye protection. You've got ear protection. So because it is like it's louder than a shotgun blast, but you basically have this like sonic boom that'll happen during an arc event. And so you need to protect your hearing. So the thing is to wear hearing protection, even at low levels of incident energy where you're not wearing like really thick FR clothing, but you still need eyes and ears to protect those. And then not wearing any polyester or any cotton or things like that, right? Again, FR clothing, and then your varying levels of flame resistance so that again, your clothes don't just melt and shrink wrap to your body. Again, there's been a ton of case studies on this in incidents that have happened, right? Guys wearing like a tracksuit and it just shrink wrapped to them. Guys that were wearing their riding leathers from their motorcycle that they rode in that day, and they did pretty well, right? Turns out leather is a good heat protector. So you have like all these case studies, and then that kind of resulted in why we and why electrical workers wear what they do when they're opening up electrical gear, right? It all stems around safety. It all stems around a calculation point from the engineers as to, you know, hey, if the worst case thing were to happen at this point, this is what you would need to wear in order to protect yourself and only have a second degree burn. Again, in the worst case, the likelihood of that worst case happening is very small, but we are protecting against the worst case incident at that particular point in the system. And so a lot of this is really important to remember. Like, again, the likelihood of it happening is very small, that it will happen, very small. But if it does, right, you want to still be able to go home to your family at the end of the day. So this is why we do the things that we do. This is why we wear this gear. This is why we protect ourselves. All those things, right? Again, likelihood small, but if it does, here's, you know, what could happen. All that is very important to culture, to training, to historical significance, to why we do the things that we do. And instead of giving the answer of like, well, this is because this is the way it is, we can give a good story. And then that be, and doing it through a story allows the next guy to pass it on, right? We all learn very well through stories, through fables. That's how things have been taught for, you know, time immemorial. And so the way to think about a lot of this is, you know, what's a good story to pass on for why we do things the way that we do them? Yes, it's going to take a little longer to explain to folks. Yes, it can get tiring and repeating those same stories over and over and over again. But just know that that is the best way to train your guys. That's the best way to impart this knowledge. It's a great way to give them reasons as to why they're doing what they're doing, and then allows them to basically, they're more likely than to execute the thing because they have a good story as to why they're doing it, not just, you know, Bob said so. And so as we go through this, and really any training, any information that you impart upon your team, your guys, it's tell stories, give some historical significance as to why this thing came about, and then, you know, relay that to the team in a story like manner. It'll really help you, your guys, and everybody on your projects to kind of understand it. And the same thing goes for like why we're doing this project. How did this project come about? Even for a hospital. Hey, well, the one that we currently have isn't doing so well. You know, we're looking for a new location. We need to keep serving our patients in this community while we build another one. So we can't tear the one that we have down. So we need to build a full new one. Then we can tear the one down or repurpose it or do something else. So we're effectively at the end of this going to have two hospitals online. Or, hey, we're going to take a wing of this one down. We'll, you know, keep our Trumbull One status, or maybe not, or like, you know, all those scenarios that go through it, or a new high school, right? Like, hey, community needs a new high school. The other one's 50 years old. The facilities are really just deteriorating. And we're ready for a new building for our school, right? Okay, well, hey, we've got this land over here. We can build a new one on. Then we don't have to interrupt school currently. We don't have to do this phased in the summers, right? We can just build this thing and we're good. Again, it's a story around why we're doing it, the resources we have, the limitations that we have, why we're operating within these constraints, and then you can move forward. And then it allows everybody to tell that story out into the community. If that's a thing, right, for a community-based project like a school, right, you can kind of give some of that background and history without kind of revealing the details of the inner project. But like, hey, this is, you know, why those choices were made. These are the things to keep everything operational, to keep, you know, morale high, to keep the students, you know, engaged and not distracted by construction noise, or, you know, whatever the story is that you want to tell about your project. So figure that stuff out, you know, get some good information from the owners and what they're doing about it, or the board, right, in a case of a school or hospital project, and then what they want to tell out into the community. Again, you're going to be as much of a proponent and a proliferator of the projects you're working on, the things you're doing in your communities, as anybody else. So you want to make sure that you're kind of on board and in lockstep with the stories that are getting told from the owners, from that board of directors of the projects that you're ultimately working on, and what you can tell out in the community. You know, as much of a kind of secretive industry as construction can be, and what projects are doing or what's happening or what we can say out in public, like, it's just best to get on the same page with what you can say in public to then proliferate the story that the owners want to tell. So guys, I hope this helps you in telling stories and helping your train your guys as you move forward, train kind of the next generation, and then just have that culture of storytelling through your company, in your community. And it'll really help out the industry as a whole to let people know why we're doing these things, why these projects are happening, you know, some of the historical record for safety and why we do the things that we do. So guys just operate safer, they go home at the end of the day, and that we all spread the knowledge that we have throughout the industry. So thank you guys so much for watching, and until next time.